So now we go to the contemporary theory, which is called as a expectancy theory. This is also called as Vroom's theory of expectancy. Vroom, 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 Vroom's theory of expectancy. It's a most comprehensive explanation of motivation is through this expectancy theory. It gives you step-by-step explanation. This is a process theory of motivation, not a content theory. Now, there are some key words. This particular paragraph is very important for us to understand. I'll explain. The theory argues that the strength of the tendency to act in a certain way. Strength of the tendency means, suppose I'm told to do some work. Now, I can do it with a lot of enthusiasm, or I can do it with medium enthusiasm, or I can do it with least enthusiasm. Now, that is what is strength. Strength means the quantum to which I am really pushing myself to do it. Some people take it very easily. Some people will take average type of enthusiasm. Others would take lots of enthusiasm. So it says that the strength of tendency to act in a certain way depends upon the strength of an expectation. I would be enthusiastically pushing myself to the highest level when my expectations are also high. So when the expectation strength is high, then the tendency to act in a certain way is also high. And this act will be followed by a given outcome. At the end of it, when I am expecting something and I act upon it, there's an outcome coming. A certain goal I'm achieving, certain objective I'm achieving. Right? And on the attractiveness of that outcome to the individual, how attractive is that outcome to me? Meaning, if that outcome is very attractive to me, if that outcome is very attractive to me, then what I would do is I would have expectation that when I do a good job, I'll be getting rewarded. Very simple. So three things are related. One is the way I'm acting, the way I'm doing some task. And when the way I'm doing the task, it could be in a very high energy level, medium energy, or low energy. I mean, I'm simplifying it. And this is based on the expectation I'm having about the particular outcome on which is attractive to me. If the outcome is very attractive, then it is expected that my expectation is also high, and the tendency with which I'll be working will also be high. If it is not so, then accordingly the tendency will be low. And the expectation will also be low. Now, this is easily said than done, it is linear. Okay, so the theory argues that the strength of the tendency to act in a certain way depends upon the strength of the expectation that the act will be followed by a given outcome. That when I act upon it, certain outcome will come, certain goal will be achieved. And on the attractiveness of that outcome of the individual, how attractive it is to me. Same goal, two of us are running after the goal. One person will find it attractive, another person may not find it attractive. So his expectation, his tendency to act in a certain way, the strength of that will be much less compared to the other person. So it varies from person to person. This is all about the inside story, the how and why of what is happening inside. Can't be explained. This can be illustrated by an example wherein the monetary incentive is given to a group of employees. And this monetary incentive is not accepted by everybody in terms of motivated behavior. One person says that this particular expectation, whatever has come, is below what I'm expecting. So he may not get really enthusiastic to reach the goal. The goal is no more attractive for him. The other person will say, oh, it's more than what I expected. Let me work towards the goal because the goal has become more attractive for me. Now, mind you, the expectation and the goal attractiveness are not together. Expectation is different, attractiveness is different. Three variables are there. One variable is the tendency for me to act in a certain way. Expectation, outcome, and the attractiveness. These three are totally independent. And they keep on varying. Because they vary, what happens is every time you find yourself, either one is ruling, expectation is ruling, so you get motivated. Second time, the outcome that is important, so it is getting motivated. Or the third time, it is attractiveness that is getting motivated. So there is an equation. Now, this is illustrated by. If you see books on behavior, it is illustrated by M. M motivation is equal to V into I into E. M motivation is equal to V. V stands for valence. Valence, VALENCE, valence. I stands for instrumentality. Instrumentality. And E stands for expectancy. M stands for motivation is equal to, it's a product of valence V into I instrumentality into E expectancy. VIE. So motivation is a compounded product of V and I and E. V is the strength of the tendency, valence. E, the expectancy is there as expectation. And I is the instrumentality, attractiveness. This is the easy way to understand. It can be seen that the theory is based on three variables. The three variables I have already explained to you. Now the attractiveness is the importance the individual places on the outcome or the reward that can be achieved on the job. This considers the unsatisfied needs of the individual. I want to buy a house. So that becomes the attractiveness. To buy a house, I am willing to achieve this goal so that I get money out of the expected outcome. Attractiveness. The performance reward linkage. The degree to which the individual believes performing at a particular level will lead to the attainment of a desired outcome. It's my belief. It's not the reality. I believe that if I do this hard work, I'll get this much amount of outcome. So that is again a motivating factor for me. And finally, we talk about the effort performance linkage. The effort that I do and the performance that I display, the probability perceived by the individual that exerting a given amount of effort would lead to performance. What are the chances that if I work hard, I'll get this reward? What are the chances that, you know, if I stretch myself extra, I'll get extra incentives? That is my feeling. Nobody's stating it. It is not written in any manual or something. The moment I perceive that the probability by exerting a given amount of effort will lead to a certain performance, and if any one of these variables is low, motivation is likely to be low. Similarly, it is not enough that rewards are tightly linked to the performance. It has to be perceived as such by the employee. A typical example is that monetary incentives. In many companies, they give monetary motivation. They'll announce a very fat bonus, let's say 25,000 per person. Now 25,000 per person seems to be pretty attractive for an average employee. Now that particular thing of 25,000 may not motivate everybody because they do not think in the same terms. So what is motivation for you is not motivation for me. So this is a point to be understood. One of the reasons why we find that in spite of giving the different motivation incentives, people do not perform. People do not perform because they do not perceive it as a motivation. To make them perceive as a motivation is the main trick. And for that, we need to understand how different people are having different factors of motivation driving their lives. Managers strive to ensure that all the three variables are high. So we must ensure that V is high, I is high, and E is high. When V is high, I is high, and E is high, then M is also high. If any one of the three, valence, instrumentality, or expectancy is low, then motivation also comes down. If I work with a high valence, but my instrumentality is low, then the whole thing crumbles down. So any one of the three variables, if it changes, motivation also gets affected. This is what the theory talks about. Now, what are the merits? The theory views individuals as thinking, reasoning beings. It values human dignity. It tells us that just don't try to buy people and buy their efforts. There is something very subtle. There is something very sublime in people. They have to start feeling. They must get engaged with the whole thing. When there's an engagement, emotional engagement, as well as some sort of a liking for the job and the expectancy comes that is inside each one of us, then only they'll work. So it is talking about addressing the human dignity. It implies that managers must make it possible for employees to see the effort can result in appropriate rewards. Okay. So they must ensure that whatever is the type of expectancy the person A has, we must actually make it attractive for him so that he is able to give the performance through motivation. The criticism, however, says the theory does not specify situations where it can be applied. It is complex and fully tested linkages are not always perceived by employees. Since it is dealing with everything to do with the inside, it has got a lot of psychological base. So the quantification becomes a little challenging. That's a criticism against it. Now, after understanding theory, managers know how to apply it. Some of the ways of motivating employees are through rewards, job design, empowerment, participative management, profit sharing, merit pay, etc. These are some of the ways through which motivation practices are applied. So when we are creating a motivation policy in the organization, we have to refer to these theories and see which of them we can apply and suitably into our scenario. So financial rewards. This is a very common way of motivating people. Individual membership and seniority based rewards are given. job status based rewards are given, competency based rewards are given, performance based rewards, team, organization, gain sharing, special bonuses, paid vacations and stock options. These are the different types of rewards that are given depending upon the focus of what is to be rewarded. I may reward you for the goals achieved. I may reward you for the group participation and group goals achieved. I may reward you for the type of skills and competencies that you're displaying, unique skills and competencies. I may reward you for your intrinsic performance. I may reward you for the job status that you're holding. So these are all the different types of positions in which the monetary reward is given. Taking it further, individual rewards are very common. Piece rate is a reward based on the units produced or transactions handled by an employee. In a BPO or for that matter, people who are doing frontline selling. You sell X units, I'll give you so much amount of money. You sell X plus 10, you give so much plus 10 proportionately. So it is based on a piece rate basis. Merit pay is based on the individual's performance and bonuses are paid on the achievement of set objectives by the individual. I perform something, my colleague performs something else, I am performing better than him. So my merit is higher, and on the base, it's not only about numbers, it is about the quality of the performance. Merit based pay. Then we talk about team rewards are paid to support team based structures and team spirit to achieve functional goals. This is about team rewards. These are in form of paid vacations or exotic locations, special bonuses or gifts. Very common. Gain sharing is a type of a reward that encourages employees to reduce cost and increase labor efficiency. Gain sharing, the focus is on reducing cost. The moment I reduce cost, there is a saving. That's called as gain sharing in this context, right? The resulting gains are shared by the owners with the employees in agreed position. Let's say a certain type of an endeavor is costing, say, 10,000 rupees. And as a team, say three or four of us are there, as a team, we bring down the cost of 10,000 to say 5,000. Extra saving of 5,000 is shared between the four of us. That is what is gain sharing. Taking it further, we have what is called as a profit sharing, and profit sharing is a typical organization performance based reward. Corporate profits are awarded to designated employees. Now, what is this profit sharing? Very simple. The profit of the organization is shared by the employees in the form of some bonus, right? And we have a very recently introduced type of a motivation practice, ESOPs. As most of us know, those of you working in IT companies, you know the importance of ESOPs, employee stock options. These schemes are declared for employees so that they can be owners of the company. Certain amount of stocks, shares are given to them at a certain reduced price. And they have a lock-in period of say a few years. After that many years, they can either sell it in the market or the company buys it back. So this is very popular. ESOPs are also used as employee retention strategies so that high achievers can complete certain years in the organization and not leave the competitors for marginal gains. So there's a certain lock-in period. After the lock-in period only, you'll be getting the market price of that particular share. So, but indirectly, what are we telling them? We're telling them, look, we are giving you some shares of the company. We are making you part owners of the company, but at a certain condition. The condition is we'll give you a stock option for 10 years lock-in period. So 10 years, you shall remain in the company. After 10 years, this particular share would have really shot up to this particular price in the market. And when you encash it, you'll be getting a huge amount of money with you. Many IT companies have done this. Now we talk about non-financial rewards, which is consisting of awards given, letters of appreciation, club membership, gift vouchers. These are distributed in recognition of achievements of employees for the when they are punctual, when they complete certain years of service, achieving savings through process improvements at the shop floor, giving some suggestions on the shop floor for increasing efficiency. These are all awarded through some non-monetary rewards. In addition to both financial and non-financial rewards, managers have some other methods to motivate staff. Okay, I as a manager may take my boys out for a movie, or I may take them out for some shopping, or I may buy them something like a tie or a cufflink or something. These are all forms of motivating my team. This may be backed up by the company or not, but I may do it because I consider by doing that, it's going to help the company's goals to be achieved in my department. I might do that. Now we discuss job design. Job design is one of the most recently, it has come into practice about say 30 years back, 30 to 40 years back, I would say. In this job design, what are we doing? We are giving motivation through designing the job by adding variety to it. Human systems or human beings, when they work with machines and when they are into any type of work, they get bored. When boredom comes in, there is a certain slackening of work. When the work slackens, motivation comes down, and when motivation comes down, efficiency suffers. So to ensure that people are kept motivated, we have to design jobs in such a way that the job functions are made interesting. The job functions add a certain amount of delight when you do the job. You feel enjoyable when you do the job. So job design has a critical impact on the motivation of the employees. It is a process of determining contents of the job and how the job should be performed. The objective is to make the job interesting to the employee. Very clear. Herzberg focused on the motivation aspect of the job design. Job rotation, job enlargement and job enrichment are the three approaches of job design. These are the three approaches which are very popular. Now, job rotation, job enlargement, job enrichment, in that order it can be taken care of. Now, what is rotate? We'll take the further slides and we'll explain. Job rotation. It means moving an employee from one job to another to add variety and reduce boredom by asking him to do an assortment of tasks. Mind you, job rotation is not about shifting people from marketing to operations. Within marketing, there are various types of jobs we need to do. You could be selling, you could be doing market research, you could be actually going and closing, or you may be doing some product management. Now, that rotation within the functional specialization is job rotation. So when you do that, two things happen to you. You add variety and experience to your job and you become more fulfilled, right? One way of doing it is job rotation. Additional skills learned by the employees in this process make them less resistant to change and more adaptable. Such employees can then be used to fill vacancies, and job rotation increases cost of training and causes temporary interruption of workflow. Of course, to train people, we need to spend some time. So that is one thing that happens in job rotation. Now we come to job enlargement. This is very interesting. Job enlargement refers to the expansion of the number of different tasks performed by an employee in a single job. It attempts to add similar tasks to the existing job so that it has more variety and is more appreciated. Now, who would enjoy additional tasks in a job? This job enlargement is usually seen to be a motivation factor for operational people, freshers who are joining the organization. They would like to learn more. They would like to add more value to themselves. So they will, if you give them more work, they are very happy because they say by learning, by doing more work, we gain more experience. That's a motivation factor in most cases at the entry level or at the operation level. Giving more tasks makes it more interesting for them. If you don't give them tasks, they'll get bored, they'll leave the company and a good resource will be lost. Enlarge jobs with optimal levels of complexity create tasks that are challenging but attainable, and they motivate employees if they are linked to organizational rewards. So when I give you additional tasks to be done in the same job, what is a job? J is equal to T1 plus T2 plus T3 plus T4 and so on. So suppose the task J is equal to T1 plus T2 plus T3 plus T4. Then when I enlarge, I add T5 plus T6 plus T7, additional task. But when I add this, I've got to give you some sort of a push and a motivation. So I link it with organization rewards I give you for that additional thing. So you start feeling motivated to do it. Job enlargement refers to the expansion of the number of tasks performed by an employee in a single job. It attempts to add similar tasks to the existing job so that it has more variety and is more appreciated. I've already explained. Enlarge jobs with optimal levels of complexity create tasks that are challenging but attainable, and they motivate employees if they are linked to organization rewards. It's a repetition actually. Okay. So now we talk about empowerment. Empowerment is a process of enhancing feelings of self-efficiency and sense of owning a job. It's not just motivation, it's more than motivation. When I motivate you, I could motivate you to do a job within certain limits of your joy and the satisfaction that you get. Empowerment takes you to a higher plane. You start getting engaged with the job in a very, very committed way. You start feeling it's mine. A sense of ownership comes in. Now, when will this ownership come? When you and I are building a bridge of trust. Empowerment cannot happen unless there's a bridge of trust that is built between you and me. So in an empowerment, what am I actually doing? I'm transferring my motivation, my sense of ownership and my sense of self-efficiency to you. Good leaders do this. By doing this, what am I doing? I'm not making you a follower. I'm making you a future leader. Empowerment is one of the prerequisites that a leader has to adopt as a practice so that his boys will become future leaders. if you want to make future leaders, learn to empower people. Empowerment involves what? Empowerment involves allowing the person to take a risk, make a mistake, and correct him instead of punishing him or blaming him. Few cultures encourage this. Being empowered, employees aspire to do a better job and suggest improvements or cost reduction initiatives. Empowerment is facilitated by a combination of factors including values, leadership, job structure and reward system. You see, if I have to empower you, I've got to work with you informally. And there are many scenarios where both of us will have to be together. And as we are together, you learn many things about what I do, why I do that. You also learn about leadership, some values, about the job structure, the larger aspects. So many things you come to learn. So more and more knowledge or information is required. The more information sharing I do with you, the more teamwork we do, the empowerment becomes much more pronounced. Now we come to the related reading. Maintaining and motivating the best workforce is very, very important. Today's growth, organizations can, growth of today's organization is contingent on developing, growing and honing talent of their workforce and encouraging them to work better. Today, it's talent management we talk about. It's important for us to not only take the right person for the right job, we have got to retain them, we have to keep them motivated, and in the same time, we must keep on pushing them to grow new talents and skills. That is the biggest challenge today. The easiest way to do so is through motivation. Keep on motivating them, give them variety, start making them feel a sense of belonging, ease, self-efficiency, self-worth, all those things we are supposed to do. This has to start from the top management. They have to create all conditions to make this happen. But in spite of that, if it doesn't happen, then there are ways and means of making it happen. If it is not at all coming, then it is a wrong recruit. We have to do something about it. Right? Getting quality workforce is an activity, but maintaining it is a process. You can hire the best brains, but motivating them to stay with you, making them grow is a big challenge. Increase in productivity of workforce increases business and revenue without increasing its size. All you need to do is to increase the productivity of people through motivation. Automatically, you will find that things are increasing in terms of business top line and bottom line. Maintaining and motivating the best workforce, the mode deployed by organizations is to motivate workforce depends upon employee profile. Now, this is a little bit tricky. There are a number of people, each one is having different types of work functions, each one is coming from a different background. Different strokes for different folks. So you have to be careful in understanding what is pushing, who is getting motivated for what purpose. So individual employee interaction is important. In some organizations, we have got a set of people in the HR department, especially organizations with large manpower, wherein these people are doing daily employee engagement exercises. In that, what they do is they are allocated about 5 or 10 or 20 people per day. They have to just go and meet them and just talk to them informally. And through the informal things, they start, you know, giving them some signals of motivation to each other. There's a certain type of information flow between the employee and the management. Some examples are given here. Amdocs in US is using a mix of financial incentives, subordinate peer senior appreciation, along with larger level of responsibility. Okay, what do? They give monetary incentives definitely. And the senior, the person to whom is reporting and his junior, all the three of them are having appreciation of each other's work. Results is not the only ways of appreciating. The efforts are also getting appreciated. Okay, one example is given about Amdocs. We can take a lot of examples in the Indian scenario also. We are not covering it here. IBM is leveraging a wide range of technology tools to connect and engage with its vast and geographical dispersed workforce. Then we come down to maintaining and motivating the best workforce. Company converges, realizes that it's vital to tap each generation's skills and potential for the reward they can bring to the business. Every generation has got certain skills. My generation had got X number of skills. Today, we are in the generation, the younger generation, some of you listening to me, would be having skills which are different from what we have. Those skills are relevant for today's working. At the same time, you'll be working and rubbing shoulders with people for our generation. So our skills may seem to be outdated, but if you pull it into today's working, it may help you in some way. Definitely is going to help you. Now, instead of saying that this is old and this doesn't work, the experience and the skills of the past, the experience and the skills of the present can mix and match with the skills that are required for the future. Younger team members can bring in a fresh approach to solving a business issue, and more experienced team members can provide their knowledge to convert it into affordable business plan. Experience of yesterday and knowledge of today both can mix and match, in other words. Summary, finally, motivation is a characteristic that helps an individual achieve his goal. Performance is considered to be a function of ability and motivation. Motivation is important as it puts human resources into action, improves level of efficiency in employees of employees, and leads to achievement of organization goals. Maslow's need hierarchy, McGregor's theory X and Y, and Hertzberg's two-factor theory are some of the early theories of motivation, which we have discussed today. Need achievement theory, expectancy theory, and equity theory are some of the contemporary theories of motivation, also called as process theories of motivation. Financial rewards are awarded on the basis of merit, seniority, job status, competency, and performance. Non-financial rewards are mostly in the form of awards, letters of appreciation, club membership, gift vouchers, etc. And finally, behavioral methods of motivation involve job rotation, job enlargement, job enrichment, and empowerment, to name a few. With that, we conclude this module, and thank you very much. All the best.